We believe that magnetism and psychology are hothouse processes, by which special tendencies of mind, though they may have been latent and wholly unrecognized, if existing in any sufficient force can be called into abnormal action, and the magnetism of a spirit, in or out of the form, is the means by which the phenomenon is produced. The school is the garden of mind growth in which the child's latent faculties are externalized. The magnetism of a nation and the psychology, which is called fashion or public opinion, is the hothouse process, by which national character is developed. Even so is it in individuals, if you can apply to any susceptible subject the magnetic processes, which are attracted to that portion of the brain where the strongest tendencies of mind exist, you externalize these, and so long as the magnetizer's influence lasts, his subject displays this suddenly developed and abnormal talent, and this is the mode in which spirits control persons for tongues, music, drawing, or any of the various gifts which have not been before manifested in their subject's own normal state. The capacity for this gift, as I have said, must exist latent in the organism, and though it may not have been developed until the magnetism of a controlling spirit externalized it, still it must have been there and formed a predominant quality of the brain. The facility for speaking in foreign tongues is one that requires first a correct ear, and next a facility for imitation, and you may urge that these are attributes only of the sensuous organism. I answer that this facility not only requires a favorable external organism but a receptive spiritual one also, for the gift of tongues, even when cultivated by education, varies in each individual. Where you find a very favorable organism for the repetition of sentences in foreign tongues, you acknowledge that such a person is peculiarly gifted in that direction. For the process of education, substitute that of magnetism, and you will find that by the same spiritual chemistry that annihilates times and space, in an inconceivably rapid process of earthly time, the spirit is enabled so to educate the tongue, as to make it exhibit the faculty of speaking in foreign language, which is latent in the brain. It is so of all the various gifts that are produced under the magnetic action of spirits. It may be queried why this, once produced, does not remain a permanent gift. There may be some present who have witnessed electrical addresses by EHB 49, experiments. We will cite one which seems apposite to our position. Applied the two poles of the battery to the root of a plant that is as yet undeveloped, always granting that the life is there and the battery is carefully applied, and you shall find that the magnetic process evolves such an exuberance of life in that plant, that it externalizes its growth in a marvelously short space of time. Remove the battery, and you will find that the plant immediately withers and droops, and seems to aim at returning to the law of nature in gradual growth, and such is the case with the medium. The spiritual battery applied forcibly and intelligently to a susceptible subject, externalizes its special latent qualities, but when removed, the subject returns to the normal state of growth that is best suited to a physical existence. Nevertheless, it retains sufficient facility by a habit once acquired, to more readily become the subject of the phenomena again. Thus it has been shown that spirit mediums have absolutely become educated to give in their normal state the foreign tongue which they have never learned, but which the habitude and facility of the organs cultivated by the spirits, have gradually accustomed them to manifest. Question 5. What is the philosophy of prayer? Answer. We are asked, what is the philosophy of prayer? Oh, answer, little child, thou who has ever looked in the mother's eye, or the father's tender face, with such assurance, such full and confiding trust and affection that thou didst know, ere the request was made, thou hadst the answer in the mother's love or the father's care already, why dost thou pray? Why dost thou ask a mother or father for love, or solicit tenderness of which thou art already assured? Why dost thou repeat the fond appeal for some wish still ungratified, but sure to find response in parental love? With all thy trust and confidence in father or mother thou must needs pour out thy heart in prayer, for it is the very voice of trust, the appeal of natural faith in love. We are but children of a larger growth, and, waking up in the midst of life's phenomena, we hear the rushing wheels of creation sounding around us in the universal crash of life's grand yet awful procession. We bend beneath the wild wing of the driving storm, We listen to the voice of the awful thunder, and our pulses quicken at the hoarse shout of the booming tempest and the anthem of the winds. 'Tis then, in our infinite littleness, that we shrink back from unsympathetic nature in her wildest moods, and feel that we are but helpless waifs on the mighty ocean of life's tempestuous billows. We stand on the shore of the restless sea, and listen to the ceaseless murmur of its tossing waves. We cannot interpret their voice, and yet they speak to our spirits in a tone that thrills us to their inmost depths. We gaze upon the bright summer sky. How glad it is! How beautiful! How deep the arch of blue that is glittering above us! How the translucent air through which we look out into the vast unknown, looking for God, looking for God! Perhaps we stand in the presence of the solemn stars, and count the multitudes of God's hosts trooping up before our eyes, even as their fiery hosts were marshalled before the enraptured gaze of the ancient Chaldean. Do we remember how long, how very long ago it was that he gazed on those same stars, and addresses by EHB 50, numbered them, and mapped them out as in a chart of human destiny? And as the canvas of the divine eternity from whence we come rolls out in inspiration's pictured forms before us, and we think of all the mighty phantasmagoric past, how small a thing we seem to be, a mere waif, an atom, a single dewdrop, a being of time yet living in eternity, a child of space lost in this vast infinity. We stretch the tendrils of our yearning hearts, fainting beneath our sense of littleness and weakness, to anchor them around the heart of God, our strength and safety, and, humbly bending low in reverent prayer, we murmur, "Our Father, which art in heaven." We are so weak, so powerless, such creatures of finality in the midst of this vast array of nature's wild phenomena. The Lord passes by, and lo, we hear the sound of the rending rocks, and the crashing storm, and the rush of his chariot wheels of fire, and quaking earth, and then comes the still small voice of our Father's love and mercy, and, as its tender accents steal into our hearts, and say to our spirits, "Peace, be still, and know that I am God," we recognize it is our Father's voice that speaks to us, and then again we humbly answer him in prayer. In sadness 'tis our cheer, in dark despair our anchor, in overwhelming joy our strong necessity of praising and overpowering thankfulness. The philosophy of prayer. It is the inevitable appeal of the child to the Father, it is the necessity of our souls, it is the link of connection which God Himself establishes between Himself and His creatures. We often know not why we pray, but we do so when we feel our spirits yearn for a communion with our Author, and our souls are too full for mortal utterance, and then it is that we must bow down in prayer, and we know that nothing but communion with the fountain of all spirit can hear or answer prayer. I claim that the philosophy of prayer is, first, the expression of our relation to the Great Spirit, next, the recognition of our faith in, and dependence upon His almighty care. I believe, too, it is the voice of God speaking in our own heart's yearnings, and crying ever in the midst of earth's Eden of forgetfulness and sin, "Adam, where art thou?" We must pray, and the effect of prayer upon ourselves is to bring us nearer and nearer yet to God, not in the sense that He is moved, approaches, or answers our finite supplications by change of His eternal purposes, but prayer connects us with Him, by drawing us up to Him. It is the soul's foot pressing into the temple of His presence. Prayer is the grandest, sweetest, holiest privilege that is granted to man. It is by prayer that we raise ourselves from the gravitating arms of matter that are drawing us down, and obey the grand magnetism of the central mind that is seeking to draw us up to Himself. It is the speech of the soul crying, "Abba, Father." We cannot lay down to you a system of prayer, we cannot in mortal words or speech, or set forms, dictate to you how to appeal to the infinite. The Spirit pleads for us itself alone. Let your own spirits arise and go to your Father after their own needs and aspirations. Trust that in this mode you commune with the Great Spirit as only Spirit can. God is nearer to your spirit than any being else can be, who would make prayers for you. Pray for yourself, and you shall find in your own nature a spiritual answer, that none but your spirit can interpret, that words cannot render, that does not admit of being formed into a philosophy. Philosophies are but the creeds, dogmas, and set forms by which we seek to define scientific principles, and understand the fundamental laws of matter, prayer transcends all philosophy. It is in the strength of prayer that human hosts avail not against the resistless power of spirit. The soul that prays and realizes the actual presence of the Great Spirit to whom it appeals, is unmoved by all that man can do against it. There is no philosophy in prayer. Prayer is the Spirit's voice of man's appeal, whose answer is in itself, whose addresses by EHB 51. Best response is its utterance, when the tones of faith direct it to the throne of him whoever hears, and ever answers prayer. Question 6. How is it possible that things future, and not depending on any necessary sequence of cause and effect, such, for instance, as the upsetting of a boat, can be foreseen or predicted? Answer. Because there is no time or space with the Spirit, but all things in the universe are one universal present. Imagine that you can behold with infinite eye the vast panorama of eternity. There you will see successions of periods, and the long chain of causation, ultimating in a ceaseless round of events, whose actions form the links in the chain of eternal cause and effect. All that is or ever was or can be on the canvas of eternity, is fully represented. Could you behold this eternal totality, you would see one infinite present, no past, no future. But you are finite, and as you move through this unchanging panorama, you take cognizance only of that which your mortal eye enables you to perceive. Something of the past that you have left you remember, something of the future to which you are advancing you realize. No more. Now, imagine that your vision is more than mortal, imagine that it is a wider radius, that you can behold a larger space in the panorama than is granted to the finite eye. It is merely a larger amount of memory, a larger amount of prophecy, you say. I say it is a larger amount of vision of that which is, a wider perception of the infinite scheme. And now extend your vision yet further, till you arrive at that knowledge which enables you to comprehend the panoramic perceptions of ages. Such is the condition of many of the inhabitants of Spirit Land. In proportion, at least, to their degree of development. You behold that which is within the circle of your vision, as they of theirs, but as that circle widens, and the Spirit throws off the veil of mortal magnetism, and, passing from sphere to sphere, becomes more and more sublimated, it perceives in the vast extent of the panoramic view of God's creation, that which appears to you to be almost as vast as a vision of eternity. And now for the mode in which these perceptions reach you in the form of prophecy. Admitting that there are spirits in sublimated spheres of existence, whose vision is so fine and so vast that they can behold immense circles of the eternal panorama of that which is, when they approach spirits of a lower sphere they communicate something of their influence, and with it something of their intelligence, to the beings with whom they thus come into rapport, and these again, assuming that they are in the sphere of your guardian spirits, approach you, and you becoming receptive to their influence, realize something of their knowledge by what the scientists call induction. And thus the sudden glimpses of knowledge which they possess, passing into your atmosphere, and for the moment impressing your mind, compels that form of unpremeditated speech which you call prophecy. Prophecy is not calculation. All the calculation of the laws of cause and effect which you possess, would not enable any one of you to determine that you should ever quit this chamber alive, as the phrase of mortality is spoken. Which of you could addresses by EHB 52, determine that you will still remain in mortal form until the moment that you must pass from this chamber? To calculate this, accurately, you must be in the thorough knowledge of all the causes of the stability of the building around you, of the atmospheric laws that may act upon this building, and cause it destruction. You must have a perfect knowledge of your own organic system, to determine how long it will maintain its integrity. You have not this knowledge, you cannot determine even that the flower you plant in spring shall blossom in summer, unless you know the various causes that may affect its growth or decay. Prophecy is not the knowledge of cause and effect, it is the perception of that which is, it is the rapport which receptive beings on earth can sustain to those who live the spheres of knowledge that enables mortals to prophecy. Sometimes this knowledge is communicated by the guardian spirit, or some controlling mind, under circumstances favorable to the reception of the knowledge. More frequently, it is an impress received from the presence of the spirit that is possessed of a knowledge, an impression upon the person who is capable of receiving it. The conditions of the atmosphere, the conditions that influence the medium, must all be favorable to the reception of the impression. When they are so, there come the mournful monitions of the calamity at hand, or the joyous foregleam of some approaching good. You cannot tell whence the knowledge comes, but your spirit recognizes it as truth. I do believe that so long as our perceptions of God's infinite wisdom is bounded by ignorance, and you cannot recognize here in this mortal pilgrimage how very good, how wise, how beneficent, are all his lessons of adversity, I do believe that the veil of mortality is wisely drawn across our human eyes to shield us from the view of coming events too mighty in their foregleams for us to hear, although adapted to the strength of the hour of trial. But this veil is fast becoming sublimated. In this age, when magnetism is in the air, and electricity is being determined by our investigations more and more towards the various organs of the brain, in this age, when the working of the spiritual telegraph is sounding at our doors and knocking at our hearts, and flashing in spiritual lights athwart our eyes, the scales of matter are falling fast from our vision, and, as the world of spirits becomes more present and real to our perceptions, so does the knowledge, which they are enabled by spiritual vision to obtain, become more and more impressed upon us, and hence the spirit of prophecy is daily growing with us. It is in that spirit that we now close the exercise of this night by declaring that the day shall come, and that within a score of years, when our eyes shall behold our teachers, when the spiritual form, that is now immersed in the fine atmosphere of its own realm, shall become palpable to our human sight, for day by day we are creating the new earth around us. These very exercises, by the determination of our spiritual force and nerve aura, in the contemplation of spiritual things to the realm of influential causes, is weaving lines of magnetism, that are traversing the earth. We know not how this great eruption of modern spiritualism has arisen, scarcely whither it is tending, by what mysterious power it has set up its telegraphic lines from pole to pole, until we find spiritualism in all parts of the earth making its mark everywhere, and, like the viewless army, whose marching footprints we only see when they have passed away, shall fresh phenomenal light of spiritual presence thicken around you. Yourselves are a part, too, of the builders of this great spiritual temple, for, by your own acts of earnest investigation and magnetic experiments, you are determining your magnetism into more and more force and power, and filling the very atmosphere with addresses by EHB 53, mediumistic emanation. Thus every earnest thought which you send forth in search of knowledge to the realm of spirits, returns to earth recharged with the spiritual influence which binds and connects the working telegraph, and so you fill the earth, and charge the air, and bind the elements in chains of magnetic influence. We hear that spiritualism is exploded. Some say that it has died out, that its mediums are exposed, its viewless hosts all driven back and powerless. We have not heard this news in spirit world, nor here on earth find evidence that spirit's work is flagging. We see the individuals fail, but not the power, we miss the waymarks, but we find the broad path opening wider and wider before us, we realize the fallibility of the instruments, but the master hands are still striking the harp of the human heart and the music of immortality is still chiming in the air. Therefore we claim, upon the basis of a science no less than upon that of spiritual love, tenderness, and affection, which is now as ever drawing your kindred and all that you have lost nearer and nearer to your side in missions of love and guidance, that to work the great mystic telegraph that has been built between the natural and the spiritual world by the law of affection, by the law of science, by the law of growth, by the eternal laws of him who is manifested in all other laws is the mission or aim of spiritualism, that as its motive powers are eternal so will be its manifestations of growth and progress. Are you not even spiritualizing matter? Shall not the new earth, which progress is ultimating, be arched by a new heaven born of the spirit's progress who depart from this earth of renewed and glorious life? Fear not, but the day is even now at hand when you shall recognize the fulfillment of the prophecy of ancient times, "Behold, I make all things new," and, "The former shall not be remembered nor come into mind." Mr. Luxmore, in proposing a vote of thanks to Miss Harding, stated that whatever might be the opinion of the audience in regard to the influence by which they were enlightened, whatever might be their notions on spiritualism or non-spiritualism, they could not but admire the excellence of the precepts that had been inculcated, tending as they did to produce that love towards God and man, which, if fully carried out, would almost turn earth into heaven. He had never left the room on any occasion after listening to Miss Harding without feeling his mind elevated and improved. He begged to thank her for the benefit he had derived, or which he knew he ought to have derived, from listening to her discourse. The vote of thanks was carried by the enthusiastic acclamations of the audience. Addresses by E.H.B. 54, address by Miss M.A. Harding, delivered at the Winter Soirees, Harley Street, London, February 19, 1866. And upon her forehead was a name written: Mystery, Babylon the Great, Mother of Harlots and Abominations of the Earth. You may deem the passage I have selected for this night's address a strange one. We will ask your attention to its elaboration as the subject of the evening, however, for you will find that it bears especially on our own movement as spiritualists, and generally on the signs of the times. It has been quoted by those who wrest what they call scripture for their own purposes, as descriptive of the splendid hierarchy of Roman Catholicism, but we are taught that no scripture is of private interpretation, and that when the passage was written it applied to a period like the present, a period when men desired to array mystery against light and revelation, for though we are told by those who profess to wield the only key which opens revelation, that there are mysteries that belong to God, I claim there are none such, but that God's dealing with man is one continuous and continuing stream of revelation, while man's interpretation of God alone is mystery. The signs of the times are now rife with the spirit of agitation, an agitation which is stirring the very depths of the human mind, and appears from time to time on its surface in the form of change and disruption, but the restless activity of the mind which characterizes the present era, is but an evidence to those who realize the ever-imminent providences of God in human history, that it is His divine spirit that is moving on the face of the waters, and that His purposes are again to be outworked in the creation of a new state of order, from the chaos and void of mighty changes. In a word, I believe that there is now a great and momentous warfare pending, the warfare of mystery and materialism against light and spiritualism, a strife between the mysteries initiated by man, against the manifest purposes of God's continuous revelation. Let me quote again the passages that I have selected. And upon her forehead was a name written: Mystery, Babylon the Great, the Mother of Harlots, and of the Abominations of the Earth. In the final destruction of the dynasties of the once splendid Orient, in the last dying hours of the broken power of the East, in the day when all the myths of old were being weighed in the balances, found wanting, and their chains broken, in the liberty wherewith Christ made man free, in such an hour as addresses by E.H.B. 55, that were those solemn words spoken to the spiritual ear of John the Revelator. The same voice proclaimed that Babylon, the type of mystery, was fallen, and these words are therefore significant, not of any special sect then in existence, or yet to be established, but of the action of man, in darkening the revelations of God in the solemn and incomprehensible form of mystery. Ignorant we may be of all the profound and infinite purposes of the Creator, but their meaning is ever becoming revelation to our growing intellect. Hence, there are no mysteries with God. Mystery is only the invention of man, to darken out God's counsels. Let us trace some of its onward steps, until the period when it wields its solemn sway over mankind today, and stands confronted with the new spiritualistic movement, which is so unmistakably the Word made flesh, and dwelling amongst men. This Word is once more, indeed, amongst you, and would spread the light over the incomprehensible, which mystery has obscured by its dark and fatal pall. Behold, in this movement, light and darkness arrayed against each other, while the day has come when spiritual persecution wields once more the arms of mental and intellectual shafts, literary racks, and moral crucifixes, and in every form that the law and custom of the time will admit of, look to see the warriors of light, intellectual and spiritual liberty, assailed by the advocates of that mystery which is again attempting to initiate her old captivity of the human soul by the imposing plea, that, great is the mystery of godliness. How idly we talk of God, and pretend to define Him, and threaten each other with His wrath, and yet, what know we of Him whom we call sometimes Allah, or Buddha, Krishna, Jehovah, God? Except, that man from his earliest intuitions of the power unknown cries Abba, Father? We know no more than this, we need to know no more. Our spirits witness, from one eternity to another, that there must be an adequate cause for the grand yet awful phenomena of creation, that creation, in a word, is but the effect of a mighty cause. What matters it how in any age or any form of speech we name the first great cause? Let the heart's utterances testify of God, and they still will say, Our Father. From the hour when we wake to the consciousness of life, from the age when we feel that we have eaten of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, and our intellect is sufficiently developed to enable us to comprehend right and wrong, and the power of a law hindering and binding us about, even when we realize a feeling of responsibility within, extending from our earthly life into the dim and untried mystery of the hereafter. By the voice of conscience, by all that we have ever known or felt as man, our reason has determined that there must be a God, and we as His creatures are bound to Him in spiritual ties that express themselves in the necessity of prayer, and praise, and worship. And with this ceaseless revelation of man's own consciousness, recognizing himself and therefore his Creator, crying, I am, O God, and therefore thou must be, from this point man feels that whatsoever of earthly toil and labor his energetic nature and intellectual being propels him to do, is performed in obedience to the viewless power he worships as God. Hence, in the earliest periods of man's existence he was a worshipper, a religious being, and in his earliest childlike state of natural intuition nearer in aspiration and inspiration to a spiritual life than now. The multitude of objects that now distract his thoughts, and engross his intellectual nature, existed not for him then. On the contrary, all was to him a vast and unknown realm, a world which, to his ignorance, was veiled in profoundest mystery. The earth whereon he trod slowly revealed to him its nature, but ever as he searched through the unfolding law of cause addresses by EHB 56, and effect, springtime and harvest, growth and decay, resolved themselves from miracle into the domain of natural law, mystery receded, and science echoed the eternal cry of man's searching mind in the ages, light, more light. And ever as light came with search, a broader field of exploration opened upon his view, whose dim horizon, mystery, became plain knowledge. And thus throughout the boundless realms of nature, mystery has receded before the light of science, and science is itself God's revelation of his laws through man. Man queried wherefore winter chilled the earth, and why the sunbeams fell with such diminished force on starving nature at certain seasons of the year. Then he must speculate why it returned to light again the earth with renewed life and vigor in the spring, and in such glorious majesty culminated to full splendor in midsummer? He asked these mysteries of nature, and no sooner would his inquisitive intellect search into the causes of change, than behold, the light-bringer, inspiration, speaks to his intellect through the sciences of astronomy, physics, and natural history. He turns the open page of God's gospel in the earth, and earth, air, sunlight, darkness, pain, and death, become his teachers, until the gathered experience of succeeding ages writes answers full in science. Age after age has each one added its monumental stone to the great cairn of revelation until it has mounted to the skies, and rears a platform on which man standing, gauges the heavens, measures the heights of air, sounds the ocean's depths, explores and understands his earth, and beholds what was once to him the mystery of God, his most glorious page of open revelation. Once that viewless mass of undiscovered matter which surrounds earth, the air which is in fact composed of the elements of matter, held in solution, was to man, mere empty space, and the upheaval of mighty worlds in its thin and unsubstantial ether, was of mysteries to man the most inscrutable. And yet by search the composition of the invisible worlds of life on every side are being revealed, from thence man has drawn his knowledge of how earths, planets, suns, and systems move, and have their being. The ages have yielded up one ceaseless revelation through chemistry, of the mystery, for such it was to ignorance, of the workmanship of the Creator in compounding these earths, and suns, and systems.